Anarchopreneur, episode number 56, success in spite of schooling. Man, that's a lot of S's. All right, here we go.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism. God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
What is up, a free market squad in the place to be? Welcome back to another exciting episode of Anarchopreneur, the BYO Boss podcast, the only podcast dedicated to helping you be your own boss, both politically and professionally. I am your host with a hero complex, the high priest of propaganda, Nathan Frazier. Thank you for taking an hour out of your day to hang with me. You, more importantly, you are the Free Market Squad. What up, Free Market Squad? Today, we're going to be talking about school. We're going to be talking about education, the education system here in America. We're going to be talking about how to succeed in spite of schooling. And Mark Twain was famously quoted as saying, "I never let my schooling interfere with my education." That's what this episode is going to be all about. We're going to be examining the roots of the education system. I'm going to give some of my own anecdotal experiences in the public education system, and why I feel schools are basically set up to create workers and not entrepreneurs. And I feel like, especially nowadays, schools set people up to fail in the modern economy. And I'm going to be talking about how that came to be, why that's my opinion. And then at the end, I'm going to be talking about how to succeed despite it all. So a lot of stuff to get to. Real quick before we jump into it, I want to give a huge shout out and a whole bunch of love to everybody that makes this broadcast possible. First of all, Truth Frequency Radio. Next, UCY.TV. After that, LRN.FM. And of course, if you want more of this great unprogramming, you can find more over at NathanFrazierShow.com. And, of course, thank you for giving me an hour of your time, for letting me get all up in your ear holes and spew my propaganda. I do appreciate it. So let's go ahead and jump right into it with this. We're going to switch it up, actually. We're going to start with Nathan Frazier Land first, and then we'll get into Focus on Freedom, and then we'll get into the BYO Boss segment of the show. So start things off with Nathan Frazier Land. I'm not a guru. I'm not an activist. I'm just an entrepreneur and an anarchist, trying to be a leader and deal with haters, man. This is my life. Welcome to Nathan Frazier Land. All right. So just a fair warning, I figured it's only fair if I start off this episode by laying out my own personal bias. I am incredibly biased against the educational system that we have currently in America and the education system that I grew up with, that I grew up under. And it doesn't seem to be getting any better. In fact, I have more qualms with things like Common Core and with the things that we see going on with social justice warriors in the campuses nowadays. It seems like the education system is just getting worse, not better. So I'm incredibly biased against the public education system. And I wanted to start this episode off by kind of laying out some of my experiences with schooling and why I'm kind of biased against it. So that's what we're going to spend the first segment of the show talking about, is some of my experiences while I was growing up under the public education system. So first of all, to put this in context, I grew up dirt poor. I grew up living mainly in inner city areas. I grew up going mainly to inner city schools. And not always. Sometimes we lived in small towns. For a little while, we lived out in the mountains, which was kind of weird. But for the most part, most of my schools were big city, inner city schools. And maybe because of this, maybe my experience was different than like suburban America school system. I don't know. I can't really judge that. But I do know that I kind of had a variety of different schools, predominantly inner city. But this is just my experience of what I went through in school. So going way back to kindergarten, in kindergarten, I dropped out. And I know that sounds a little bit crazy, maybe a little bit sensationalist, but it's the God honest truth. I hated kindergarten. I started going to school in kindergarten. And maybe a week and a half in, I just realized and decided this is not for me. And so instead of going to school each day, what I would do is I would get up in the morning, I'd get my backpack, I'd get dressed, I'd head out the door. My mom let us walk to, this was back in the day when it was, I guess, safe to walk to schools. I don't know if it's less safe now, but parents don't seem to be as hip on letting their kids walk to school. Like, well, maybe they do. I don't know. But my mom let us walk to school. I was in kindergarten. I would join all the other kids, walk to school. But on the way to school, there was a playground. And I would get about 3/4 of the way to school, and then I would diverge from all the other kids. All the other kids would continue going to school. And I would head to the playground, and I would play on the playground all day. Well, half of the day, because kindergarten was only half day. So I would go, and I'd play on the slide, and I'd play on the tire swing that they had. And or sometimes I would just walk around. I remember one day just walking around all the there was a really rich neighborhood that was offset from where we grew up at. And some of where we grew up at, we were in the very low-income areas, but just a few blocks one way or the other, you might find middle class, and a few more blocks, you might find upper class areas. But I remember one day just walking through all the upper class areas, going and playing with tennis balls on the tennis court and just walking around all the different back alleys and all that stuff. That's what I would typically do on while everybody else was in school. I just got sick of school really early and I just stopped going and instead went out and started exploring the world around me. And about 2 weeks in, maybe 3 weeks in, the principal of the school called my mom and was like, "Hey, is everything okay with Nathan?" My mom's like, "Yeah, why? What's going on?" And he's like, "Well, he hasn't been to school in like 4 days. And it's the end of the week. We haven't seen him all week. And we were just making sure he was okay. You haven't called and said he was sick or anything." So needless to say, when I got home, my mom was like, "Mijo, where have you been?" I was like, I was at school. I lied. Bad me. Anyways, she asked where I was really at because the school called and said I wasn't at school. So I told her the truth. I said I went to the park and I was on the playground all day. And she asked me why. And I said, because I didn't like school. And they started having what was called a truant officer. I don't know if they still have those, but basically a police officer started showing up at the house, picking me up, driving me to school, and making sure that I would actually go to school. And that worked for about a week until I realized that I could just leave on our first recess and walk down to the playground, and I could stay at the playground until the other kids. I heard the bell ring and the other kids, I saw them walking home. So I just catch up with them and I'd walk home. And so about 3, maybe 4 weeks in, maybe a month and a half in, a couple of weeks after this police officer kept picking me up and driving me to school, they finally just gave up. They said, "Look, Nathan's just not ready for school. We'll let him take the rest of this year off and we'll try again next year." Unfortunately, I did have to go back to school the next year. And same thing, truant officer came, picked me up, but they broke my will. And I finished out the year and then started a long 11 and a half year miserable journey through the public education system. Also, that was the start of how I started my educational journey. One of the things that really bothered me, though, about school is I consistently failed art class. And I consider myself to be an above average artist. I've gotten paid professionally to do graphic design for many years. I think in sixth grade was the first time that I actually got paid for my artwork, and it was to design a brochure or some kind of thing for a local church event. And I was like, wow, people will pay me to draw. In counseling, when I was in maybe preschool, the counselor, I was 4 or 5 years old. I still remember the counselor teaching me to go from drawing egg-shaped people to actually drawing stick figures. And once I figured out how to draw stick figures and everybody else that was my age still was drawing egg people, I was like, oh man, I'm a way better artist than all these other kids. And I just loved drawing. I drew Ninja Turtles. That was one of my first things that I started drawing. But no matter, despite the fact that I was a better artist than most of the kids around me, I always had contention with the art teachers. I didn't want to follow their instructions in art class. I always wanted to be artsy. And I don't know, man. Either way, the outcome was I consistently failed art classes all the way through school. Even though I was one of the only kids actually getting paid for my art, I was still failing art classes. So that made me kind of have a disdain for the education system as well. And I remember in third grade, we had a meeting, and maybe I was a little bit too ballsy, but we had a meeting about how I was slumping in all of my grades compared to the other kids, except for math. I was failing in math at the beginning of third grade, and I had a teacher's aide that took me aside and was like, look, I'm going to explain some stuff to you about math. She was, I don't know, maybe early 20s. She seemed like an old person to me at the time. But she explained some basics of math theory. She showed me how multiples of 9, or at least double digit multiples of 9, would always add up to 9. And that blew my mind. So 9 times 7, you know, it's going to be in the 60s, and 6 plus 3 equals 9. So it's going to be 63. 9 times 5 is going to be in the 40s, 4 plus 5 equals 9, so it's going to be 45. That blew my mind. And then she started showing me other ways that different mathematical equations would work. And I was like, wow, math is like the universe. And in that 1 year, I went from failing all of my classes to failing all of my classes except for math. And the teachers, at the end of the year, they had a parent-teacher conference, and they were just like, they wanted to hold me back and make me repeat the third grade. I think they did make me repeat the third grade. But one of the things that got brought up in that parent-teacher conference was that I had a learning disability, quote-unquote. The teacher looked at my mom, and she told her, we're afraid that Nathan has a learning disability. To which I looked at the teacher and I replied, well, has it ever crossed your mind that maybe you have a teaching disability? Which did not go over well. But that was kind of the consistent theme of my educational process, which led to me eventually dropping out of high school, then getting enrolled in alternative high school, and eventually dropping out of that high school as well, being told that without my GED, without my high school diploma, without a college education, I would never amount to anything. And look at me now. I don't amount to anything. No. Now, despite not having a college diploma, despite not having a high school diploma, I'm a business owner. A struggling business owner, granted, but I have two businesses that I work. I also have a part-time job. At my part-time job, I make more money than most of my managers do. I also don't have crippling student loans that are holding me down. And outside of my 9-to-5 part-time job, when I do my freelance stuff, I often make 3, 4, 5, sometimes 6, 7 times as much per hour as they do. So, yeah, I don't know, man. Plus, I mean, I get to work with incredibly successful business owners. I get to work with world-renowned marketers and copywriters. I get to work on marketing campaigns that help successful people become more successful. And I usually get paid a very decent amount of money to do it. So the whole you can't succeed without going through the hoops of public education and higher education, it's just not been my experience. And it's actually been my experience that the opposite is true, that nowadays the most successful people are the ones that are self-made, and the people that go through the educational system from start to finish actually have a disadvantage going into the world. So I'd like to take a moment and kind of explore why that might be the case. And that's what this week's Focus on Freedom is going to be all about.
I went from rapping about chemtrails and get more bait to rapping about how business owners can get more pay. Before these status fools, we need tools to defeat them. Live Free FM, Focus on Freedom.
All right, so the first half of this week's episode was all about my own personal anecdotal experiences in the public education system and why I am kind of dead set against the way it goes. This segment of the show is going to be talking more about historical facts and the history of the American school system and how it came into being and why it kind of backs up my own experiences and makes me feel like maybe even as a 5-year-old in kindergarten dropout, I was maybe onto something deeper and more sinister than I even was able to realize at the time. So we're going to talk about, or I'm going to talk about, and you're going to listen, because I'm the teacher here and you're the student. I'm going to be talking about the history of the American school system, and we're going to start with Prussia. Now, some people probably know this, some people maybe don't. Our coercive public education system is very heavily influenced by the Prussian education, the Prussian model of public education. And Prussia is, or was, what later became Germany, what we call Germany now. Back in the mid-1700s, that geographic location was known as Prussia. And in the Napoleonic Wars, Prussia was dealt some devastating blows and losses to Napoleon. And the biggest reason why was in the middle of these conflicts, a lot of the Prussian soldiers would start questioning why they were at war, would start putting down their guns, started thinking for themselves, stopped following orders, abandoned rank, and it ended up leading to a bunch of losses. And the king of Prussia at the time, Frederick the Great, he commissioned somebody named Johann Heckler. I think Johann Julian Heckler, I might be wrong on that, but Johann Heckler, he told him, look, we need to figure out how to create better soldiers. And Heckler was like, look, if you can give me access to or control over the public or over the schools, over the education system, I can mold the next generation of people into obedient, state worshiping citizens, military, whatever the case may be. I can make those obedient soldiers and citizens that you want. And so Frederick the Great told Johann Heckler, yeah, have at it. Go ahead and do whatever you need to do. So he set up a school system in Prussia that was tax funded. People had to pay for it. Everybody was forced to pay for it. It was mandatory. So everybody had to go to school. It wasn't just the rich kids that got to go to school. The poor people had to go to school. The middle class people had to go to school. And it was nationally regulated. They had seminars that told the teachers of all the different schools what they had to teach. Very much a federal school system. And it was the first of its kind. So one of the things that set it apart is there was three distinct tiers to it. So there was like the top tier where they trained certain kids to be the leaders, certain kids to be heads of state, the ones that would run the businesses, the ones that would run the military. Then they had the lower tier or the middle tier that was, this is where we're going to create the people that will manage the things for us, the people that will be like mid-level management of society. And then they had the lowest tiers, and that was the tiers of children that would be trained to be workers and children that would be trained to be unthinking soldiers. So they had a one school system that was broken up into three different factions. And those three different factions would educate people for different roles in society. It was very centrally planned. And the goals of it were to have and create an obedient society, and to create a society that was very dependent on state welfare. And the eventual outcome was a society that was very much of the mentality of do as you're told and you will be taken care of. And it worked. It worked wonders. The soldiers stopped rebelling. The entire citizenry became very much unified under the direction of Frederick the Great. And it created a very strong nation state. If that's your goal, it succeeded. And this was back in, I want to say like the mid 1740s when they first implemented this, maybe 1730s. And by 100 years later in the mid 1800s, it was doing so well that America was kind of a new experiment. Both countries, Prussia and America, were both kind of like non-organic. They were nations that had come in and taken over and established a nation through conquest and not through long generational development, but very much come in, let's plan this, let's make this work, and let's see what the outcome is. So both of them were kind of experimental. America was kind of went a different direction in certain ways, but America, here in America, the leaders wanted something similar to what the Prussians had as far as the educational system goes. And they basically said, well, we need an education system here. There's too many people not being educated. And we got to figure out how to get more people educated in this country. Otherwise, we're going to fall behind compared to some of these great nations like Prussia. And so they sent a gentleman named Horace Mann over to Prussia, and he's kind of known as the godfather of American education. So he went over there, him and his wife, I believe, went over there. And from what I've been able to read and acquire, apparently they went over during summer break. So they met with a few teachers. They didn't actually see students in the classrooms. They just got to hear what the teachers were saying about the education system, what the administrators were saying. But they didn't actually sit in on any classrooms. They didn't see what was going on, but they got to hear all the praise from the authority figures. And they came back praising that model, saying, oh, this model's so great. It's created this great, strong citizenry. It's created people that fall into line and do what needs to be done for the betterment of society. And so Horace Mann, with the aid of people like John Hopkins and John Dewey and the Rockefeller Foundation, they kind of implemented on a small scale and then eventually on a much larger scale the Prussian education model over here in America, but kind of tweaked. Whereas over there it was to create, you know, blind obedient citizens and blind obedient soldiers, over here the goal was, like I said, the Rockefeller Foundation got involved with it. The goal over here was to create what has been kind of dubbed the factory model schools, to create obedient factory workers that would be perfect little cogs for the new and upcoming industrial revolution. So whereas on one continent over in what's now known as Germany, they were creating perfect little socialist, state socialist citizens and soldiers over here, they wanted to create obedient factory workers. And so fast forward another 100 years, it's been fully adopted. The system has been fully adopted over here, and we're about 100 years into it, and Prussia is about 200 years into this education system. And now we're at the early 1920s, and now Prussia is Germany, and we're starting to see some of the negative consequences of the Prussian education model, which is we're very much national socialist. The mentality of obey the state and they'll take care of you is prominent over there, but because of the idea of the German super state and their culture is better and they should spread their culture throughout the world, endless wars of spreading their culture, they start having economic downturns and they start running into issues where the state can't provide everything that the good citizens need to survive. And so instead of looking in the mirror and saying, hey, maybe we should do a little bit of self-reflection, maybe we should change. No, they pick a boogeyman, the evil Jews that run the world, and they elect a great man to help save their society. And the rise of National Socialism occurs, and the rest is, as they say, history. And by this time, both German culture and American culture is so entrenched with the Prussian education model that it's too late to turn back and reverse course. So we'll look at what this means for America on the other side of the break.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Are you a liberty-minded entrepreneur, small business owner, agorist, or freelancer? Do you ever struggle in your business and feel like you're all alone in the world? Can you imagine how great it would be if there were a community of freedom-loving business people just waiting to connect with you? Can you keep a secret? There is such a community. Free Market Squad is the online mastermind group for people who are passionate about freedom and success in life. Access to a mastermind group is probably one of the most valuable things you could have in your life. And membership in the Free Market Squad is absolutely free. If you have a Facebook account and you want more information on how to join the Free Market Squad, head on over to www.freemarketsquad.com. That's freemarketsquad.com.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handycar's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
And we're back, Free Market Squad. We've been talking about the Prussian education system and its influences on the American education system. We kind of went from the mid-1700s, a really quick, brief covering of how it went from the 1700s all the way up to the mid-1900s, like 1925-ish area. And then that, of course, led to Nazi Germany. And we're going to kind of make a divergence. This is still in that same area, still in Germany. But we're going to talk about another school of thought. We're going to change direction from the Prussian education system, and we're going to talk about the Frankfurt school of thought. Now, this is an ideology that came out of the University of Frankfurt, and it started gaining popularity in about the 1920s, and it was heavily influenced by people like Karl Marx and Immanuel Kant, Sigmund Freud, and Hegel. All of these guys were big thought leaders at the time, and especially in Germany. And so in the Frankfurt School, there was this great worshiping of these ideas of these guys, these mainly anti-capitalist ideas, but also really against Soviet socialism. They saw what was going on in the Soviet Union, and you get that same old tired argument of that's not real Marxism. And that every time you bring up all the failed socialist experiments, socialists want to say, well, that's not real socialism. That is very much the mindset of the Frankfurt School. Every failed experiment in socialism is because it wasn't real Marxism. But they knew the real Marxism. If they could just have their Marxism, they would be able to provide the utopia that that was promised by Karl Marx. And so while they didn't see completely eye to eye with Soviet socialism, they also didn't really see eye to eye with the National Socialism that was kind of on the rise in Germany either. And when Hitler rose to power, they actually left the main proponents of this school of thought actually left the Frankfurt, the University of Frankfurt, and they relocated. I can't remember where, but they did continue the main thought leaders of this school did continue with promoting and propagating their ideas. And around this time was when the European revolution of workers, the European Workers' Revolution. Karl Marx was very, very adamant about the fact that when it took place, where it took hold would be in Europe, and then the rest of the world would adopt it. As the Workers' Revolution proved how well it worked in Europe, then the rest of the world would fall into line. Well, it failed in Europe. And one of the biggest reasons, instead of just admitting that they had a flawed idea, that their utopian ideas were retarded and would never work and were incompatible with human nature. No, they said it was because of Western civilization and capitalism. And capitalism, it made their ideas too hard to spread, because especially in the West, in America and in Western Europe, the economic mobility was too great. The ability to, especially like immigrants in America at the time, a lot of immigrants were coming here and they came here with nothing, pennies in their pocket. They worked their asses off. They started their own shoe shining business, or they started their own bread baking business, and they were able to become financially independent. And some of them were able to become upper middle class or upper class people, going from nothing to becoming upper class and living the life of the bourgeoisie. The economic mobility that capitalism was providing at the time, it was too enticing to Western civilization. And even the lower class, people of the time still had it better than the people that were starving in bread lines in Soviet Russia. So the old idea of the bourgeoisie versus the working class, it wasn't taking hold in America, because in America and in a lot of Western Europe, the working class were able to work themselves out of working class and into the quote-unquote bourgeoisie class. So in order to make their ideas easier to spread, class struggle alone would not bring about the Marxism that they envisioned would bring about the utopia of Karl Marx. So instead of focusing exclusively on class struggle, the ideas kind of morphed into what is now known as cultural Marxism. And I'm not comfortable saying that like they intentionally did this. It happened though. And I don't know if like all of these cultural Marxists that we have now in the professors in academia and all these social justice warriors that they're churning out, I don't know if it was intentional back then in the 1920s, if that was their end goal. Some people might say that's a conspiracy theory. I'm not sure. But regardless of whether it was intended or not, that is what ended up happening. And so the idea of the bourgeoisie versus the proletariat kind of morphed into the privileged versus the victim, or the oppressors versus the oppressed. And it's no longer just a class issue. It's every issue where one person has privilege, or one group of people have privilege over another group of people. And so now it's kind of morphed into this, this school of thought where, white people have privilege over brown people, and males have privilege over females, and people with all four limbs have privilege over people with people who are missing limbs, ableism. People who are skinny have thin privilege over people who are fat. Everybody's either it's the world is simplified into victims and oppressors, and in order for the victims to have a fair shake at life, the oppressors, the ones with privilege, must be brought down to the level of the victims. And so now it's not just about class. Now it's not just about economics. Marxism is more broad, and it's about all different areas of life. Where one person has an advantage over another, that person must be an oppressor and must be brought down to the level of the person that they oppress. And it doesn't even have to be intentional oppression. Just because they are born into that privilege, then they're an oppressor. And all privilege must be attacked until all people are equal in all forms. And that combined with the Prussian education system has kind of brought us to where we're at today, where we have two main schools of thought. We have basically National Socialists on the left and National Socialists on the right and International Socialists on the left. We've got this, we've got like the alt-right Nazis, and we've got the alt-left communists. And that's like what the political discussion has been boiled down to. Either you're a Nazi or you're a socialist. And it's for me, for somebody like me, for somebody who's not comfortable with either of those ideologies, it's kind of an uncomfortable place to live in. It's kind of an uncomfortable political atmosphere to exist in. But if you understand the two centuries now of education, or at least in this country, a century and a half of these two influences on our education system, and the fact that kids go through 12 years, sometimes 16, sometimes 20 years of these ideas being forced onto them, it's very easy to see why those are the only two main talking points that get discussed now, and actual classical liberalism, individualism, and the ideals of liberty are pretty much completely ignored in the mainstream narrative. And we've got Fox News on the right telling us that nationalism and national. So, I mean, because to be completely honest, the right wing is just as socialist or close to as socialist as the left. They just want it to be on a national level. And the left wing is admittedly socialist, but they're very much so more so on an international level. So that's where we're at. We're at, you can either have national socialism or you can have international socialism. And the idea of liberty, the idea of individuality, the idea of meritocracy is almost non-existent. And for me, That's just not an awesome place to be at. But that's where we're at. So what are we going to do? How are we going to make it out of this situation? Well, in my opinion, the free market is still the choice. The free market is still the option that can save us from going down either, you know, the socialist path or the fascist path. I still have faith in the free market, and I still have faith in entrepreneurs and the entrepreneurial spirit. But the entrepreneurial spirit is definitely almost silenced, definitely disabled in the public education and higher education system that we have. So this week's Church of the Invisible Hand is going to be talking about how to overcome the shackles placed on the entrepreneurial spirit by the education system. So let's go ahead and jump into this section, or this week's BYO Boss segment, and we'll take it from there.
For my free market squad members out on the grind, you gotta be your own boss, can't just fall into line. You gotta have a free mind
and hope for the future.
You gotta be the free market
and arcopreneur.
All right, so I feel like I've laid out my case for how we got to where we're at and why I feel like the education system is set up against the entrepreneurial spirit. I want to get into some examples of how the school system sets people up for failure in the entrepreneurial realm, and how we can overcome those disadvantages. So first of all, I'm going to start with authority figures and asking permission. In school, in public school, and maybe not so much in higher education, but definitely in public school, we're taught that we have to ask permission from authority figures for everything. You want to go to the restroom, you have to ask permission. You have to get a hall pass. You need to take a day off of school, you have to ask for permission. You want to pretty much everything. You have to find an authority figure, go and ask them if it's okay for you to do this. And if they say yes, then it's okay. If they say no, then you're absolutely forbidden from doing it. And that is not conducive with how the free market works. That's not conducive with how to run an effective business. And what it results in, what this results in, is it results in people that are afraid to innovate, people that are afraid to rock the boat, people that are afraid to make their own rules. And all three of these, innovation, the ability to rock the boat, the ability to live life by your own rules, all three of these are vital for running a business. All three of these are vital for succeeding in a capitalist economy. And so, The permission-based mindset, the running to authority figures to find out if something is okay to do, definitely set you up to be a good worker for somebody else to you know, follow the authority figures at the workplace, but they definitely do not set you up to be your own boss. And so to counter this, I heard this piece of advice a long time ago, and it's a simple sentence, but it's so profound. And so I'm going to say this, and this is something that I try to live by and has done me very well. To counter all of this, just remember this one sentence. It's better to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission. Just remember that and you'll be okay. All right. Next, we're going to talk about failures versus lessons. So in school, if you fail at something, it's a bad thing. You get F's, you're labeled as a failure. You get punished for giving the wrong answer. It's not like, here's the deal. In school, if you fail at something, you're less likely to succeed at that. If you fail in English class, you're not going to succeed. You're not. The more times you fail in English class, the less likely you are to get an A at the end of the semester. And then you can't move on to the next English class, and you can't move on to higher education. You failed too many classes. You failed your SATs, so now you can't go to college. When you fail, there's like this dark cloud that surrounds you in the education system. It's very bad to fail. But in business, you need to fail, because every time you fail, there's a lesson in there. And actually, in business, it's probably better to fail faster. The faster that you can fail, the faster that you can learn the lesson that you needed to learn, and the better. And so in the school world, every time you fail, you're shunned for it. You're told that there's something wrong with you, that you're not smart enough. But in the business world, every time you fail, it's a sign that you actually tried. And if you fail, there's a lesson there. There's something to learn, and it helps you get better. In school, if you guess on a test and you get lucky, you get praised. But in the business world, if you have a lucky guess and you succeed because of that lucky guess, you didn't learn anything. Yeah, you might have learned something, but it's always the lessons inside of a failure always make a bigger impact, always teach you a lot more. And if you get lucky, then you're just like, oh, that's the way it is. But it might have just been luck. So getting lucky on a test in school, you get praised, you get an A, you get told how smart you are. Getting lucky in business might happen once, probably won't happen again. And if you try to rely on your luck for a second time at bat, you're probably going to strike out. So getting lucky in school on a test is a good thing. Getting lucky in business is temporarily good, but in the long run, it's not so good. And also, in school, you're taught that failing is something to be avoided. And so if you fail at something, you stop trying at that thing. You stop, you fail your spelling bee, then you don't volunteer the next time because you don't want to fail again. But in business, you need to learn how to embrace failure. The more you fail, the more you learn, the more likely you are to succeed in the long run. Whereas in school, the more you fail, the more you're discouraged, and the less likely you are to achieve in the long run. Okay, so next I want to talk about the idea of getting straight A's. In school, on your report card, you come home and your parents look at it, and if you get straight A's, if you're strong in every single area, woohoo, good for you. But if you don't, if you're a human being and you have areas where you're really strong and areas where you're not so strong, somehow that's looked at as being bad. So let's imagine this scenario. Imagine that you're really good at math, but you suck at geography, and you're okay at science, but you suck at PE. So you've got areas where you excel and areas where you fail miserably. But you got a friend who's okay at math, not as good as you are, but science just really lights his fire. He loves science, but just like you, he's not very good at geography and he's not very good at physical education. You two are the nerds. And so PE is definitely not your strong point. And you have a homegirl. You got a friend that she is just not good at math at all. But geography, she just goes nuts for it. She loves geography. She can tell you the capitals of every state. She can tell you what type of rocks are found in different areas. She can tell you what kind of plants will grow where. That's where her brain ticks the best at, is geography. But she's not very smart at science, and she's a girl, and she's kind of dainty and frail. So she's not very good at PE either. And then you have one other friend who is just dumb as rocks, but strong as an ox. Can't put two and two together, but can carry 150 pounds for a mile. So out of the four of you, y'all have your weaknesses. Y'all have your strengths. Now, imagine you make this secret pact and you all get together and you agree that the one that's strongest in each area will do that area's homework for everybody else. So you do everybody's math homework, and the girl that's really great at geography, she's going to do everybody's geography homework. And your buddy that's really good at science, he's going to do everybody's science homework. And we'll just pretend we'll make something up for physical education. Say that for phys ed, everybody has to have some app on their cell phone that shows how much heavy lifting they did at home and how frequently they were doing it. And so when it comes to phys ed, everybody gives their cell phone to this guy. He does all their heavy lifting for you. And now as a whole, all four of you are doing great in school because everybody's homework is being turned in and everybody's getting straight A's on all of their homework. If you did this in school and you got caught, you'd all be in trouble for cheating because because that's just not how school works. You're not going to learn any good lessons about life if you cheat your way through school. In school, this is a huge no-no. But in business, this is a must. In business, you have to delegate. You have to leverage everybody's strengths. You have to ease off of everybody's weaknesses. You have to spend time in the areas where you specialize. If you're a business owner and you're a big picture type of guy, you need to spend your time focused on the big picture stuff. If you're somebody who's very good with the details, you need to spend time focusing on the details and not worrying about the big picture stuff. If you're somebody who's good with the heavy lifting, you need to spend your time doing the heavy lifting and not so much of your time worried about the big decisions that need to be made. Because in business, the more time you spend away from your strengths, the less successful the business is going to be. So in a business, it makes perfect sense for everybody to say, hey, I'm the best at geography, so I'm going to do all the geography lifting. You're the best at actual physical lifting, so you're going to do all the physical lifting. You're the best at math, so you're going to take care of making sure the books are in order. In business, it makes perfect sense for people to get together and create these packs and only focus on what they're good at and let everybody else benefit from what they're good at, and they benefit from what everybody else is good at. But in school, you'll be punished for this. You get kicked out of school for this. So in this one area, straight A's versus playing to your strengths and delegating your weaknesses out to other people, in school, you're rewarded for the exact opposite of what you're rewarded for in business, and you're punished for what you're rewarded for in business. So it's kind of crazy. School sets you up for a mindset that, at least in this area, is the exact opposite of what works in the business world. Next, we're going to talk about one of the things I really hated in school, which was multiple choice answers. The idea that all the answers have to come from the authority figures, and at most there's going to be four different options to choose from, and only one of those four options is the actual option, and you're not allowed to think outside of those four options. You have to pick one of those four that were approved by the authority figures, and they'll tell you which one is correct after you choose. I always hated that idea. Because in the real world, in real life, there's millions of options to choose from. And there's rarely a right and a wrong explicit answer. Depending on the conditions, one answer might be right. Depending on other conditions, that same answer might be wrong. And the other thing is, what really bothered me, especially once I became an adult and realized what was going on in the world, most of these authority figures, quote unquote, have no idea what they're talking about. The majority of what's going on in the world is the blind leading the blind. At best, it's the people with just a tiny bit more vision leading the blind. Hashtag not all authority figures, but for the most part, people that claim to be authorities on things, they're just people that know a tiny bit more than the average person does. So in the business world, you have to learn how to become your own authority and embrace the world of possibilities. And then the last one before we're out of here is this mindset of one size fits all. You go to school, everybody at this age gets this lesson, and everybody has to learn by this teaching method. And anybody who learns differently is somehow malfunctioning. And the truth is that people learn differently. What works for somebody who learns by reading doesn't work for somebody who learns by working with their hands. What works for one person doesn't work for the other person. What works for one example in the real world won't work for another example in the real world. But what it leads to is people wanting like three-step methods to success, but not those three steps won't work for every single case. The marketing that works, mass marketing works great for megacorp, but mass marketing doesn't work for mom and pop corner store. Facebook ads might work really great for one audience, but direct mail will work better for another audience. So this idea that's just drilled into your brain through the public education system of one size fits all does not work in the business world. And that's the show. Deuces.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Hey, did you enjoy that episode? I hope that you did. If you did and you want to help out the show, there's a couple different ways that you can do it. Number one, make sure that you're subscribed to the podcast. If you're on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play, I don't know, Dog Catcher, is that one? Podcatcher, Podcast Addict is the one that I use. Make sure that you're subscribed to the show. That helps out a lot. Also, if you enjoyed it, why not leave a rating and review? Let other people know how awesome the show was, and that helps as well. And lastly, if you know anybody that you think would get some value out of this show, send it to them. Tag them in a Facebook post, email it to them. I don't care how, but get the message out there about this episode. I feel like it was a very good episode, and if you felt the same and you know somebody who could benefit from listening to it, bring it to their attention. I would appreciate it. They will appreciate it. You'll be both of our heroes, and life will be great. Until next time, Free Market Squad, I'm out of here. BYO Boss, be your own boss. Deuces.